Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
The nation's most powerful business executives have issued what amounts to a new mission statement. It moves away from the view that shareholder profits trump all other goals. The new statement, out today and signed by executives on the Business Roundtable, asserts the following, quote, "Americans deserve an economy that allows each person to succeed through hard work and creativity and to lead a life of meaning and dignity." Back in 1997, the Business Roundtable said the main objective of a business enterprise was to generate economic returns for its owners. Well, reporter David Gellis is following this story for the New York Times. He's with us now. Hey, David.
Hi.
What prompted this statement? Why now?
For years now, business has been getting more and more wrapped up in some of the social and political debates roiling this country. And at a moment when Senator Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are really pointing fingers at business, the CEOs finally realized they needed to try to recast the public's perception of what it is business is here for.
Practically, does this change anything? What does this mission statement actually do?
What they're trying to do is not so much say every one of these companies is going to adopt a certain policy. Instead, what they're trying to do is redefine how the public thinks of what businesses are here for. For the longest time, there's been this notion that the primary role of business is to increase shareholder value. Finally, businesses are getting around to saying, maybe that's not all we're supposed to be doing. Maybe we do need to be taking care of our workers. Maybe we do need to be taking care of the environment. Maybe we do need to be taking our suppliers and treating them fairly. Now, again, these are lofty sentiments, but we have yet to see is exactly how the Business Roundtable proposes all these companies go about doing that.
Right. I can imagine some people listening might listen to the lofty sentiments, and even if they like them, say, how about some not quite so lofty but more practical sentiments like maybe pushing for a $15 an hour minimum wage or paid paternal leave or other things that might practically help the lives of employees of these big corporations?
I spoke to the CEOs of many of these companies today, and they'll all be quick to point out, hey, we actually do take pretty good care of our workers, and hey, we do have lofty and laudable parental and family leave. I think what we're seeing, though, is a real disconnect between what individual companies do and how the broader business community is perceived by the public. Because we can see, even if one company has a great leave policy, we're still at a moment when the divide between rich and poor is widening in this country. And at a moment when the environmental problems we're all facing collectively are getting worse. And so what they're trying to do and are going to have to figure out is how to translate this sort of collective sentiment of goodwill into real action that everyday Americans sense when they go about their daily lives.
Would I be completely cynical to ask if these CEOs might still have their eye on the bottom line in the sense that if they are seen as, quote, good companies working in the greater public interest, that might ultimately be good for the bottom line?
I don't even think that's cynical. They would agree with you. They would say that, hey, if we take good care of our employees and we take good care of the environment, ultimately, in the long term, we're going to have a better and more sustainable business.
That's David Gellis, business reporter for the New York Times. He's got a column there called Corner Office. David Gellis, thanks.
Thank you.
like Brother Hell.
It's an election year, as you know, and the big issues, health care, the climate, immigration, gun safety, are finding their way into the national conversation. But when it comes to one big issue, parental leave or family leave, companies are still the ones really making policy in how much leave, latitude, and support they offer. And many caregivers, even ones with good jobs and benefits, are finding it's still hard to make it all work. That's Christina Cheyenne's story. She decided to leave her job at Google to stay home with her youngest, but she didn't go quietly. In true tech fashion, she did the research and sent it all to the company's CEO and head of HR when she resigned in March, outlining ways she thinks the company can do more to support working parents. She posted her findings on Medium, and when we caught up with her, she told us when it comes to policies that help working parents, childcare at work is a good start.
I came to think of on-site childcare as one of the really more important ones, but it has to be in kind of in combination with paid family leave and then also kind of a conversation around flexibility at work. But basically, I found that certainly smaller companies were having really good success with it. And on their books, it was totally paying for itself. And then you would see in their leadership and their senior manager levels where, you know, many companies see a drop off in the number of women and more diversity kind of falls off there. Those companies were maintaining at least a gender diversity ratio of more like 50-50. Again, at a small company, it didn't cost a lot. And then I kind of looked at my company that is incredibly profitable and makes many billions of dollars in profit a quarter. And that might be quite possible at a company like mine. And then I found, you know, a case study about another very large company with more employees than Google that had done it or had tried it.
So there were a couple other things that were interesting. I mean, the piece is very interesting, but you said pay for interviewees' childcare so that they can attend on-site interviews. And you said that particularly with underrepresented groups, lack of access to childcare may even keep them from even interviewing. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, this is a very active conversation. Certainly in tech, where, you know, where I work, where it's very underrepresented in all kinds of categories, but it's an active conversation and there's a lot of intention around having a more diverse team. That's good for us. That's good for our users. And it struck me in looking at all of this stuff, and then it's really relatable when you think about it, but sometimes you're in a position where you can't really arrange the childcare until you have the job. It's a little bit of this chicken and an egg. And so, you know, the interview is really, it's untenable in a way. But then you just miss out on plenty of people who are maybe have been taking care of children, or for them up until this point, the equation worked out such that it was more cost effective for them to stay home with their children than to have the job. And so, yeah, it just seems like you're leaving people on the sidelines, and that's certainly an expensive one, relatively.
I guess the $64,000 question is, you sent this very sort of comprehensive kind of idea here. You sent it to HR. You sent it to the CEO. Did you get a response?
I did. I heard back from the head of YouTube HR, who clearly read it and was really thoughtful in their response and said that, you know, this supporting YouTube's parents, because that was my subject line, is a priority. It's a total priority. And that, you know, there were some really good ideas in there. And I'd like to talk further. So that was the response that I got.
Okay. That sounds like yay. I mean, that was,
yeah.
What is that? I don't even know what to say to that. What does that even mean?
I think I had an assumption that really large companies like mine would have the easiest time implementing these things because they had the resources and they had these huge piles of money to throw at this stuff. But what I've heard is much smaller companies are more nimble and can more quickly make policy change. And so I've heard from startup founders who've reached out who want to have, you know, a diverse team from the start, a company culture that supports everyone from the get-go as they grow, and they've made changes readily, like adding reimbursement for interviewees' childcare. So I think maybe, I don't know, if I underestimated how hard it would be to institutionalize something like this at a big global company, But yeah, it would have been great to hear. And tomorrow, on-site childcare for everyone, you know.
Well, what do you think? Now that you've put it out there, what do you think? Do you feel hopeful? Do you feel pessimistic?
No, I think I do feel quite hopeful. I heard back directly from companies that decided to make policy changes as a result of the research. So my sort of experiment there, you know, if you have the information, then you might do something with it, so far is proving positive.
That's Christina Chayant. She's a former employee at Google. We're talking about her piece in Working Mother magazine describing a letter of advice she wrote to her former employers about why they should institute better and more supportive family policies. Christina Chayant, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information about the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, August 23rd, 2019, so I have been told. This is our weekly forum on neutralizing workplace racism. If we have any non-white listeners in the known universe, you don't have a problem with income inequality, as they call it, in your work situation. You are compensated justly and have been for some time. You don't have any of those issues if you are a parent. If you need time off for your child, it's not a problem. You don't have child care issues. None of that is your concern. Your work schedule is accommodating. It's not changed around willy-nilly every other week, every 4 or 5 days or what have you. You don't have people making false accusations, trying to hamper your ability to get raises, promotions, accelerate in your career. If we have any listeners in the non-white universe who have figured out how to accomplish that, please do not spectate. Dial in. In fact, you should be the first person to dial in. That number, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, as always, if we have folks, if you have problems, concerns, questions that you would like counter-racist suggestions about, certainly, dial in. We'll do our best to be logical and try to help solve problems without creating new problems in the workplace. Before proceed, certainly, as always, if you are not comfortable or not able to dial in, you can always send an email untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. We can read your comment or suggestion, whatever it is. We can read it anonymously if you have concerns and can share during the live program. So before we get to our callers, again, I've been asking for a few weeks now if we have any listeners. You figured out these are things that if you are expecting a child and you are working, system of white supremacy, these are things that you should, might be recommended that you do to take precautions, kind of clamp down on some of the prying and invasive question asking that you will be subjected to and other tacky incidents that may happen over the course of your 9 months until you have a healthy child, hopefully. And as I said, it's been a little slow. I don't have children myself. I get the impression that some people that do have children may not have been quite as codified at that time. So as I said, sometimes it might be looking back and kind of, oh yeah, I wish I had known this information then. And, you know, I would have done this or not done that. So still in the spirit of thinking that piece, I was kind of checking the news as I normally do. That piece came by. It was, I thought, interesting where they said that just if more employers provided childcare, that sometimes not having adequate access to childcare can be the difference in whether or not a person has the access, the time, the ability to interview for a job. Just something as important as small as childcare, where the resources are available. That's always a great one to ask, even if you're not pregnant now, if that's something that might be down the road, looking at what resources are available for parents in that job, and even asking questions beforehand can be great. Continuing, I used a report of a Dallas black postal worker. He was being verbally terrorized by a white race soldier. So, like, some white man over 60, I'll say. And the black male did a great job of keeping his composure. I always think that that is important in terms of just being reminded that really no other aspect of counter-racism matters if we do not remember to maintain our composure when we're subjected to terrorism, especially when they get rolling, talking about racists and it's nigga this or any of that. To not have a reflexive, instinctual reaction, even though we might be upset, but to calm down, remember the setting, and try to make sure that everything we say and do is going to work to our benefit, to maximize how we handle to respond in the situation. And I think the black postal worker victim in this instance, he did a good job keeping his composure, and the tacky racist white man was caught on video, so worked out well. Let's see. We'll get folks who wrote in. Make sure I share. Okay. All right, this is a black female. Actually, she's a black mother of two. She says, I've been working in a warehouse. I've been working in a warehouse for the last going on 5 years. I was pregnant with my son, and they were sort of accommodating to my needs. I did have some issues, but I made it through. Before I got pregnant with my daughter, I was only working part-time, so it was much less stressful. I've been the only female working there for the last 4 years, so I'm always the center of attention, whether it's because of my pregnancies or how I wear my hair. That day, I really didn't have any code when it came to my pregnancies. My job doesn't require a lot of talking to others. My overall code has been to go into work and keep the contact to a minimum. The women there are older and very toxic. I don't delve into my personal business. I would never allow them to touch me or invite them to baby showers or gender reveal parties. I have run into an issue recently when it comes to breastfeeding with my son. I only went about 6 months. I was working so much that I felt sort of rushed with the supervisor that I had. She would be on my every move, on my every break. When he had turned 5 months, she asked me, was an idea, and I had to run into an issue recently when it comes to breastfeeding with my son. I only went about 6 months. I was working so much that I felt sort of rushed. I'm like, I read that. Felt sort of rushed with my supervisor that she would be on my every move, on my every break. When my son turned 5 months, my supervisor at the time asked me when I was going to be done, which I thought was very rude, done with the breastfeeding. I was a first-time mom and just getting the hang of nursing. Fast forward to now, my daughter is 17 months. I've been exclusively nursing her entire life. Wow. That is super commendable. They, in prenatal teacher training, they said that I think one of the world recognized health boards, probably a lot of individuals classified as white, but they say should be breastfeeding exclusively until age 5, which I found, I mean, I couldn't even imagine. But they said 5, at minimum 2. That's what I've heard pretty consistently recommended from a lot of folks who do a lot of child nutrition, especially the people that give big thumbs up on the breastfeeding first 2 years. So that is spectacular effort for the first 17 months. I've tried weaning, but she's not interested. So I figured that I would go until she was at least 2. By law, it says there my job can let me use the lactation room for 1 year, and they would allow me extra break time. About a month ago, my supervisor told me that HR wasn't going to let me use the room anymore. I asked, would it be okay if I use my lunch breaks because I was still nursing? And she said that would be fine. A couple of weeks ago, I go to use the room and it's locked and they changed my code so I couldn't get in. Mind you, when I first started using the room, there was no locker code that I needed to use. I feel like they only put that in place because of me. I've seen maybe 2 women from the corporate office use it and they didn't use it very long. So I go to use the room and it's locked. They changed my code so I couldn't get in. Mind you, when I first started using the room, there was no locker code and they needed to be used. I feel like they only put it in place because of me. I've seen maybe 2 women that repeated. I went to HR and asked, could I get another code so I can use my own time to pump? She told me to pump in my car. Woo, man. I'm sorry. Wow. Wow. Just wow. Just wow. The tackiness. The tackiness. Again, I thought this was me too. Isn't that what they've been saying for the last, 2-3 years at least, 2016 or so? I thought this was me too. This was women taking over the workplace. Isn't that what they said? Isn't that what they've been saying the whole go pump in your car when we have an actual lactation room here? Your time for the room has expired and we have put a lock on it. Go out there and do your business in the vehicle. Maybe we'll put up a shed next to the recycling dump out behind the building and you can go pump there. Continuing. Not sure what I should do, but I'm pretty sure there's nothing I can do since by law they gave me my year. I hope that makes sense. If anyone has any advice, that would be greatly appreciated. Wow. The pumping in the car, that does seem like something I'm sure legally they have no obligation. But I mean, if you have 2 people in the building using the room, it's not like it what's being reported is an avalanche. You got a line waiting outside the lactation room of folks waiting to get in. Like, are you serious? This is the best alternative is go pump in your car if you've got to still carry on with that business. We allowed you your year and other people need to use the lactation room. Matter of fact, it's filled right now. Whew. The tackiness abounds. The tackiness abounds. That's why I thought it was great. I'm ashamed. That's why I said before, I'm ashamed having not thought of, ooh, what would counter-racism code look like for pregnant moms during that time period? And even afterwards, because, I mean, this is after the pregnancy and still, you know, that's a major lifelong, you know, adjustment that seems like something that we should have major dialogue about. I'm sure this is not the only mom out there, non-white mother, who is running into problems trying to breastfeed on the job and having extraordinarily tacky racist resort to these type of measures. So if we have other folks who might have suggestions, a question to ask, if you have dealt with this problem, if we have hopefully lots of folks, if you have children doing any breastfeeding or if you've already done that, suggestions for things maybe that you can help get assistance on the job, at least get some space to yourself. You can go and do that. I thought, it's almost 2020. I thought they were having more workplaces that were being inclusive and recognizing, oh, yes, these are people. They don't just come here as robots and do this. These folks are parents and what have you. Let's try and support that so that they can be effective parents. They can be more effective when they come into work. Disgusting. If folks have suggestions for our victim of white supremacy mother trying to do as best she can on the job and still breastfeeding, which again, highest commendations, that is spectacular. And that's another reason why you want to wait 2 years. Dr. Welsing talked about it's such an intensive process. You definitely would like to have that lag time so you can do your breastfeeding, recover from the pregnancy, and then have the next child. Dr. Welsing was a genius. Understatement. Before I get to callers, I will go. So yoga, that has turned into another career of sorts. Speaking of yoga, the Cal's Yoga Retreat for Florida, December 28 to January 1. All of the information is posted on my blog. You can check it out. I've posted it repeatedly, the link on Facebook, Twitter, other social media sites. If you have questions, drop an email and we will let you know all the details. Counter-racist meals, counter-racist workshops, plant-based meals, and yoga. No decorations, no Christmas nonsense. Being constructive headed to 2020. But yoga that has blossomed into a career, a job of sorts. We did the retreat earlier this year. I was teaching in the park this summer. That was lots of fun. Some of the listeners got to come there. And I just had a victim of white supremacy. She came to one of the classes at the park. She was introducing me. And she said, oh, yes, he's a yoga instructor. And I paused. I was like, whoa. Why is she introducing me as a yoga instructor? And I stopped. I was like, you are? In fact, you just taught a class and she was there. And I said, wow, that is kind of crazy. And I told her about it later. And she said, I think that unfortunately is probably kind of common for a lot of victims of white supremacy, regardless of, you know, whatever type of occupation that you have. But so, how say it, that so few Black people are encouraged and really supported if they're engaged, if they have a business, or even if they're working for somebody else, but they're working really hard and doing whatever it is, devoted to their craft, trying to be great, trying to do constructive work, that so few of us get support that we don't think, oh, yeah, I'm, you know, whatever, I'm a yoga instructor, or I'm a dentist, or whatever your chosen profession is. I'm like, yeah, that's what I do. I'm an educator. Yeah. That's what I do. And I'm good at it. I'm great. I'm competent, you know, not in a boastful manner, but just being confident about the time and energy that you have invested. It's not like, you know, they just give out certificates. We can say, oh, yeah, I'm a dentist today. Like, you probably had to put in a lot of time and energy. And I feel like so many non-white people, the effort that we put into being professionals is just totally disrespected. The postal worker totally disrespected all the time and energy that he invested in getting that job to have somebody to just talk to you like and treat you like a nigger. That's the system of white supremacy. So that's one. And I think so many of us have reported on having our confidence eroded with all of these terrorist acts that we suffer in the workplace. So that was one. And then two, sticking with the yoga and sticking with my own reports, I wanted to teach more. I said, hey, I would like to be competent and I want to teach more so that I can teach to Black people, non-white people, and be competent when I do so, and wanting to get more reps and opportunities to teach. There's a studio, or many studios, very close to where I live, which is, you know, not surprising here in Seattle. So I do up my yoga resume tips, always a great idea to have that resume fresh, and even look for ways that you can enhance your resume, if that's making it better so that it comes up in search results, or tweaking it slightly, depending on which particular job you are applying for. But keep your resume fresh, up to date. So I get my yoga resume together, There's an internship opportunity where you get to teach a number of classes that are open to the public. You can get critiqued, brush up on any skills. If you need anything that you need to work on and you're instructing, you can do more learning, research opportunities, all of the things that I wanted to do. And you get to add that to your resume, opportunities in the future for a job opportunity, perhaps see if things go well. But I figured this will definitely have to be counter-racism, both with questions and just being there as a guestee. As I said, I think last week, that some of the white suspected racists at the yoga studio, they know I am Gus T. I wear my cow's counter-racist t-shirt every yoga class. So it will be interesting. If all goes well, I will report and let people know how the classes go and all of that. Again, my whole goal here is to learn as much as possible and then to see if I can get some teaching opportunities. Again, I would encourage folks training. I think this came up last week. Mr. Williams emphasizes this all the time. Any opportunities in your job, in your profession, where you can get additional training to enhance your skills or pick up new skills, take them. Be the first person. Be super motivated. First person, I think B said that last week. First person to sign up on the list for a new training opportunity, asking about training opportunities, looking for chances to get better, to improve. Things that, as I said, you can put on your resume so that you look like someone. Wow, she is really hardworking, really motivated, and trying to get better, always looking for ways to improve. And that is just for you. That would look good for others, but I mean, that is for you to kind of constantly be in that mode of us learning and improving. Still learning, somebody says that. Still learning and improving. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If we have suggestions specifically about dealing with being barred from the lactation room on the job, if we have any parents who have dealt with that and getting resources, assistance, if you're breastfeeding on the job, I think that's super important. Or any other tips around pregnancy, workplace, super, super important. Again, I'm ashamed it took us so long to get to this subject matter. *61, if you have thoughts to share. First few folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello, Gus.
Greetings, B in Toronto.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings to the callers and listeners as well. So, yes, I do have a tip. Just to give you, and this is a tip in respect to the question on the writer who talked about being barred from the lactation room. I know that in Canada, there is the Human Rights Code. What's little known about it is that a protected class is also family status. So a person cannot be discriminated based on family status, whether they're single, whether they're married, whether they're divorced, whether they're a parent or not. So in this case, I can only speak about Canada. But you might find something comparable, maybe within your state legislation, maybe in the federal legislation in America. So this is based on prima facie evidence. And prima facie evidence is a legal term used to mean that you have enough evidence to prove something by pointing to some basic facts, but that your proof can also be refuted. So I'm going somewhere with this. In terms of the lactation room and being barred from it, if possible, based on reviewing the laws, and I know that in Canada at least, a parent can actually sue the employer for duty to accommodate, in that they are being discriminated based on their family status. In that they were a parent, or they are a parent, and as a parent, they would need to lactate as a means to feed their child. and that based on basic facts, in order to feed their child, they've chosen the method to breastfeed, and therefore there should be a lactation room available in order to do this, so that it does not interfere unduly with work, and it doesn't interfere unduly with the parent of having to go outside into the car to do so, where it's under conditions where they will not have privacy and more likely to be at risk at being violated, you know, by someone looking into the car and watching them do this. It's undue stress. So that could be a possible argument. The other thing that would be helpful is getting more people to promote this. So if there's other women within her workplace that are also experiencing the same thing, it's better to go in numbers, in that this argument has more weight to it in terms of being heard, and that changes hopefully will be more immediate, as changes tend to be slow. So that is one tip that I would suggest. As a parent, I was not codified at all. In fact, it was more in my recent years, I'd say within the last 5 to 10 years, that I've been learning more and more. And based on actually your show, Gus, as well as from listening to Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. and reading Dr. Francis Cress Welsing's journals, I've become more focused and more codified as a result. So I thank you, and I thank Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., and I thank Dr. Cress Welsing. I also thank Dr. Tommy Curry, because they add a lot more insight, and you all add truth to what's actually happening. Now, just to report as to what's been going on in terms of work, what's been happening, well, this happened today, in that I was one of the white women that had been very terroristic, along with her gang of females, came up to me and asked me for a resource. And so I gave her the resource that was required. Then she turned to me as she was sitting beside me, and she told me, "Oh, well, you know, I miss you." And I just looked at her and just went and told her, "Well, I will be sending you the resource by mail, so you can see it very shortly." I acted like I didn't hear it. You'll see it very shortly, and I got to go back. I got to make a call, but thanks for stopping by, and I hope it helped. And in my mind, your voice, Gus, actually came into my mind very clear. The delectable Negro. it was very uncomfortable indeed. And I would be exercising more distance away from this female, as with the other females who were involved in the white terrorism that they projected upon me. And I'm sure it's not only me, even though it feels like it. I'm sure that they've projected among others as well. Let's see. The other thing that I wanted to go back to, because I had also lost my train of thought, was in terms of as a parent, because I wasn't codified, I certainly didn't allow the coworkers to rub my belly or anything. When they started asking intrusive questions like, "Are you still with the dad? Is your dad here in Canada? You know, are you guys married? Do you plan to have more children? At the time, I would be answering questions because I felt I needed to give an answer. Going back, I would not have answered any of those questions. I would have, I don't even think I would have mentioned that I was pregnant until I was showing. And then even then, I would be like, you know, I'm trying to have a stress-free pregnancy, and all these questions just create a high level of anxiety. So let's try and keep it calm, and yeah, let's just focus on work. That's the more codified answer that I would have given at the time. Thank you so much, and I leave the line.
Delectable Negro, top 10. Much obliged, be in Toronto. And I said, I think a lot of folks have said, you know, at the time that I had or was pregnant, or, you know, we were having children, I didn't know the things that I know now. We're all still learning. A lot of folks said that. And I said, hey, that's fine, too. We can do the same thing. You just look back and, oh, man, if I had known what I know now, this is what I would do. This is what I would say. They come in with those tacky questions. Oh, you with the baby's daddy? Are you still doing crack? You know, you're doing crack while you're pregnant. It will impact the baby. Did you know that? Any of those tacky questions, everything is, I really prefer if we not discuss the pregnancy. We're just here to do work. Love that one. Just all the questions about the pregnancy. It just raises my anxiety. And the thing that would be best for me and the baby's help is let's just stay focused on work. And we don't have to worry about all that. I appreciate everyone's concern for our well-being, and if we can just focus on work, that'll be the best thing for all. Keep my blood pressure down and keep my mind active and focused. Now, about that report for noon, right back in the question lane. Love it. And that's why I said too, thinking, because I wouldn't be thinking. That's why I said they get really intrusive. You talk about, you know, asking questions and prying before, like, oh man, you get pregnant, like, hey, we can ask about anything now. Like, where's the baby's daddy? Is this your first child? How many babies? I mean, nip all that in the bud. Let's see. Yeah, the miss you. All the tackiness with the miss you. Do not be fooled in the workplace. They will say things just to lower our suspicions frequently. Folks who have thoughts on the breastfeeding issue, that's so important. If folks have suggestions, tips for dealing with the breastfeeding issue in the workplace, I think going in groups to question about this is a phenomenal suggestion. If you can go in groups to inquire about that, and I think specifically if you...
Hello, Gus?
Sorry about that. Woo! Alrighty. I'm dealing with the... Woo! Parenting is hard work. But with the lactation room, if you can go in groups, that is spectacular. If you are not able to go in groups, she said in the report that I think there were only two females using the lactation room currently. This is not something where if I'm an employee here for 5 years, 6 years, I'm not going to be using the lactation room for 6 years. I don't think we're going to have, you know, all the employees in the building. Why? I got to get in the lactation. That's not the case. Hopefully, we will be weaning off at some point. Since this is such a temporary experience for the female employees who are here, and since most of the female employees will not be pregnant at the same time, why would any employee who is currently in this sensitive situation be denied a resource that we do have? And that might even be a question that can be framed in just that way. This is not something that if it's 50 employees here, I don't think 25 of them are going to need the lactation room. I could be wrong. I've never seen that sort of work environment. Even if it's 50 employees, I don't think 10 people are going to need the lactation room. If it's three of us, we should be able to work that out super, super easy. And that might even be one I would go all the way up to the CEO on this one. whoever the owner is, like, go to the most powerful, the white person that can solve this problem in 5 minutes. I'm here to do a spectacular job as an employee. But I'm not just an employee. I am a mother with a small child who is still in need of nourishment. My breastfeeding does not interfere with the job, but we do have a room here. We have a facility that could be used for this very brief purpose. I'm being denied. I would go directly to them and ask. You can, you know, get the wording in another form, but that might be an option as well. If other folks have thoughts on dealing with that situation, or if you have your own problems, triumphs even, again, if you figured out some codification, things that work well in the job to solve problems without creating new problems, *61, let us know. While folks are getting their questions together, if you are a parent, particularly if you are a parent who has done some breastfeeding, definitely cannot be a spectator on this one. While folks are getting it together, a different black female wrote in. No coincidence, but I anonymously reported that a workplace ethics violation has occurred and named names. My white female manager, who is married to a black male, has been avoiding the black employees and calling out because, in her words, she needs to go to the beach. I reported that black employees were unjustly locked out of getting promotions or moving to a different role. This is blatant, as the only people getting promotions are white people who have been here less time than the black employees. Now, the report is supposed to be confidential, but I don't believe that at all because I made the report. My white female manager would not leave me alone. From the moment she would come in, she would start with me, the usual, accusing me of things I didn't do, changing the rules when she would see me do anything, closely monitor me, and just constant terrorism. After I made the report, she's been silent and has not come near me once. I know you mentioned having a work uniform to lessen any issues you may have, but what do you do when white females start copying what you wear? The white women at my job are copying me and actually have, sad to say, gotten other black employees to have a problem with me for no reason. When I first met the other black employees, there weren't any problems, but once this white woman came into the picture, I became hated by everyone. I am not upset, as I am aware white people have that energy, but I'm curious what lie they used about me to convince other black people to dislike me. I'll pause there. They're kind of two questions. Okay, so the first part with the uniform. I've talked about that before. When I say uniform, in this counter-racist context, I mean for the workplace, specifically having not like flashy clothing, not really colorful, just wearing really something very similar. I've even said maybe even you buy 3, 4, 5 of the same shirt, blouse, slacks, whatever it is, so that you really are not calling any attention with your wardrobe. It's clean. It's acceptable for the job, but it's clear you're not investing a whole lot of energy. I'm not coming to work to profile. This is not my red carpet as I stroll by to get to the copier or to drop something off to be mailed. That is not what I'm doing here. I am professional. I'm neat. I'm clean. But there's nothing that's going to call a whole lot of attention to my wardrobe. If white women are copying what you wear in the workplace, I probably wouldn't say a whole lot about it. I would say, if anything, I've said consistently, surveillance. We're under surveillance. If you've noted that they're paying that close of attention to where they're actually going out and purchasing the same clothing and wearing the same clothes or the same style that you are, then that just lets you know the level of scrutiny that you're under. I'm not sure if that in and of itself would be reason for me to change what clothing I'm wearing, shoes or what have you, whatever it is. I would make a note of it, obviously, but I'm not sure that in and of itself, unless it meant I would shift down even more to be even less flashy and less stylish. Not saying that you are, unless that, but I mean, I might not even do that. The other component, the white woman coming in and causing conflict, or at least getting the other black employees to seem like they don't like you, that is very, very, very common. It does not take a whole lot. They can come in with gossip. They can come in with jokes, anything or nothing at all. When you are not around to come and say they are phenomenal with that sort of thing. I think Kizzy's cousin had written in several times talking about the same thing, a white person coming in and creating a wedge, as they say, between another black employee where they had been cordial, courteous before. The best thing that I try to recommend in those situations is, as you said, understanding. This is what whites do. Birds chirp, dogs bark. Not getting frustrated with the non-white people in this situation. They're victims. They probably don't invest that much time in studying racism, white supremacy, so they might not grasp what's happening. This white person is coming in and deliberately trying to get them to dislike these other victims. So try not to take it personal with them. And I would still make an effort to be courteous with them. It doesn't mean that you have to be bestest friends and you all have to hang out for drinks or anything after work. But certainly not for drinks. Sobriety would be best. But I would still be courteous. I would still say, you know, good afternoon, morning, call them by name, just workplace courtesy. I would still maintain that because you never know. These whites, whatever they're saying, there might come a point, particularly if you stay on the job. I think it's always great if you can maintain rapport with the other non-white people there. There may come a time that white person, their racism shows, and those other victims then might want to talk and be like, man, that heifer, you know, I thought she was cool. We went out to lunch and did all that. Now I found out that, you know, I think she could be a racist. When they want to talk. So I would try and maintain the courtesy. As I said, workplace courtesy doesn't mean you're friends. Doesn't mean that you, quote unquote, trust that person and think that they're a sister or brother because they're black. Just maintaining courtesy, even if, you know, we're not going to be on great, great terms right now because of racist interference. But at least courtesy, courteous. And if things can change down the road, so be it. She finishes out the letter or report. I have a question I wanted to ask. Jay in New York, so perhaps it was another New York caller, but I remember him mentioning he got a new job and the department he works in is all non-white, so there's no racism there. My question is, after a few months of working there, does he still believe there's no racism there? So our caller, if you just started your new job, New York area, and it's all non-white employees, is racism still not a problem in your work area? You can write in, let us know, or dial in, let us know. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. So now we have a few questions. Our caller who just wrote in terms of what to do. White female employee has begun copying what you wear at work. Do you make an adjustment? Do you say nothing? How would you proceed with that situation? And then you've got, it seems like, more white women who have got the other non-white employees to dislike you in responding. How would you deal with that situation? And then again, we still got the breastfeeding situation. What do you, if we have any recommendations on trying to remedy being banned from the company lactation room? Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, suggestions, line should be open. Proceed. And again, if we have particularly, we have any parents who have done any breastfeeding, had to deal with that in a workplace scenario, no spectating. Let us know how you dealt with that on the job, how you were able to get any support. That would be super appreciated. folks are still spectating. We'll let them get their questions together. Again, if things are going this spectacular, that folks don't have any observations or problems from the workplace, well, hey, invest in the context of white supremacy, the blog, racism-notes.blogspot.com. PayPal button is in the top right corner. If you're not into PayPal, you can drop an email and we will get you a physical mailing address. We're also on Cash App, cash.app/$thecows. But invest. So if you're not having any problems, race soldiers are not causing you any difficulties at work, things are going smashing, well, bravo, even though, as I've said consistently, that should also mean, wow, how were you able to accomplish this? You should let us know if you're not having any of these difficulties in the workplace.
Hello, Gus.
Be in Toronto.
Yes, I wanted to add another possible code that I find has actually been working quite effectively. So when coworkers are saying, the ones that are doing the terrorist act, when they are saying, oh, you're not being a team player, we are wondering if you should be part of the team, the way that I would deal with it before was I would just listen and just continue doing my work, which is exactly one part of the code. But then what I've been doing as of late is I've also been sending out resources to the team, and but the way that I've been sending out the resources is in writing, or I would do it strategically in front of an influencer at work or my supervisor at work. If it was something in terms of communication, another method other than email, it would be flyers or things of that nature, so that it would constantly be showing that I'm adding resources to the team, and then I'll put in little blurbs of, and I can't stand this cliche, but I put it there anyways, there's no I in team type of deal, or something corny like that. And then what I do, like what I plan to do with all this material, is when it comes to evaluation, the supervisor is asking me, well, you know, what did you do during this whole time? I can pull out everything that I've done and show. And then, you know, also follow up with, oh, and you can ask so-and-so, who happened to be there when I was giving this, you know, white female terrorist, well, I wouldn't say white female terrorist, in my mind I would be saying it though, this resource or that person, that resource. So then it's not refutable. You can actually see the evidence there. So that is the code that I've now entrenched in, and I'm quite certain that it would be most helpful for others to use as well. Thank you. I leave the line.
Love it. Be in Toronto. They do get a lot of non-white employees with that one about not being a team player. And I love any time that you can engage in activities where it leaves a trail, where it's bam, I sent out resources, constructive information, and whammo, date, time, all of that, so that people can see clear evidence of your contribution to the team. And then you can add any of the no I in team right on, boop, right there, looking out for everybody. I love it. And Mr. Fuller, I've heard him specifically when they give, if that is given as a critique that you're not, you know, a team player, you're not a part of the family, to ask for specifics. Exactly what does that mean? Exactly what does one do who is a team player, so that you'll have a better idea of what you need to do to evidence that, oh yeah, I'm on the team and I'm a big time contributor to the team. Let's see. Much obliged to be in Toronto. Let's see. Other folks dialed in, if you have suggestions and or your own situation you would like to share, proceed.
Hello, Gus. May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, for the young lady that was breastfeeding, she might go to the Fair Labor Standards Act and find out what that says about breastfeeding mothers. And so many times we have people that will try to manipulate those federal laws and possibly ignore them now since we're living in the age of Trump, which is sad. And I just wanted to throw that in there. So it'll give her like a basic guideline to start with. And whatever she does, do not go out in her car and expose herself to some bad situations that may occur by doing that in a car, which should be done in a private manner. I will hang up and listen.
Just what was the, you said she should check, what is it again?
The Fair Labor Standards Act.
Thank you.
FLSA. Break time for nursing mothers.
Got it. Fair Labor Standards Act. Love it.
Yes, sir.
Love it. And that could be
and
some.
And if she has a union.
Go ahead.
Oh, excuse me. If she has a union, she can go to a union and file a grievance. But most employers, you know, unions are basically falling by the wayside. And it's easier for, an employer to attack a employee because employees don't work together as a unit or as a team. And like the one, you know, that you were saying, if you go in there collectively, they have to deal with everybody and not just one person, which is easier to attack one person than it would be to, you know, attack a whole group. I don't like using the words attack, but that is what they do in some way, shape, or form.
Thanks
for taking my call.
Much obliged. Appreciate that. That I'm going to get the link and see if they have information. Yeah, she said that they referenced, because that law, it mentions that you have to give reasonable break time for an employee. It's a section 7. You have to give reasonable break time for an employee to express breast milk for her nursing child for 1 year after the child's birth. 1 year after the child's birth each time. And she seems to think that they will just say, hey, we did our reason. We did our 1 year and, you know, you're on 2 years now. So we don't have any further obligation to accommodate your breast feeding needs. Do you think this would help someone who is beyond that 1 year threshold? Oh, might not be with us. Oh, did you mute your line, sir? Maybe you're not with us anymore. Not here. Oh, I thought that was still in here. But yeah, I'm not sure. They might scoff. But again, even though it's beyond the 1 year threshold, my response would still be, or in fact, you can even bring in the literature. This is not, you know, Gus's opinion. These are doctors who have checked what would be best for child nutrition. It's 5 years minimum, too. So I think that might be good information to bring in as well. But again, just coming back to the basics, if it's only two of us here, three of us here that even have, you know, a need for this room, why should anyone be barred from a resource that the company has readily available? Is that the best way to proceed? Is that the best way to handle business? Let's see. Other folks dialed in. Again, if we have suggestion, much obliged for the suggestion, sir. Other folks, if you have your own situation, if you have suggestions on anything that the callers have chimed in about, again, we had the question as well, non-pregnancy related, about the white woman changing her wardrobe, or I guess mimicking the wardrobe of another black female employee, and then how to respond when a white person is instigating conflict and getting non-white employees, black employees, to dislike another black employees, how to deal with that effectively. Folks have suggestions. on any of those specifics. If you have your own situation to deal with, line should be open. Proceed.
Hi, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is Draftomania, and hi, Gus, and callers and listeners. I wanted to respond to the situation regarding the young lady who stated that the coworkers are basically what they're doing. They're mimicking her, you know, her clothing, her the way she dresses. And, you know, they've gotten other employees to, you know, act indifferent to her, act like they have an attitude or they don't like her. I just wanted to state, based on, you know, research and my own experience, because I'm learning, I'm still learning, I've been, because I am curious about when things are happening to me, I'm trying to find out exactly what it is so I'll, you know how to conduct myself in a better way so I won't have to continue to act the ways that I used to act, which were not necessarily constructive for me. I, within my research, I found out that, like, narcissistic abuse, with them copying her way of dressing, it's like a basic form. It's a form of psychological abuse, and they call that mirroring. When somebody asks if they like the same things that you like, or they try to mimic it, or they're doing it for the opposite reason, to basically cause you some type of psychological trauma. So when she comes in and she sees that everybody is dressed like her, it's a form of abuse because she is the only one that may notice this. So if she was to try to go to somebody else, it's a form of gaslighting also, which is just crazy making behavior. If she tries to bring this up or to discuss it with anybody else, what's going to happen is she's going to appear like she's crazy. And it's all it's a tactic. It can be researched. It's a whole methodology and that they do in order to psychologically traumatize and abuse a person. It is definitely abuse. But like I said, it's really evil and terroristic, because if you say something about it, you're going to be the one that's going to be appear to be crazy. So it's good that she's able to discuss this on this platform. I wouldn't suggest that, you know, you go about maybe talking about it with anybody else, because you will appear to be crazy. But that's why it's designed to make you look like you are crazy. That's the whole intent and purpose of this type of behavior. And also with the black employees not liking her, they're acting indifferent. That's also a tactic that's used. It's smear campaign. What they do, they go out and they just use maybe lies. A lot of it could be lies, or it may be something that may be the truth, but they exaggerate it. Anything that they can find out about you is going to be exaggerated and made to make you look like that you are the villain. So it's all forms of psychological abuse. I would just say, you have to kind of you have to take care of yourself. Do research, learn. I find that learning about things will definitely help. It helps a lot, because when you don't know what's really going on, it can cause a lot of confusion, and you will start to doubt and question yourself, because that's what it's designed to do. It's designed to make you doubt yourself and question yourself. She's not crazy. Everything, like I said, everything that she just expressed that she's going through, these are known tactics. They can be researched. It can be looked up. You can, there is information out there on Freedom of Information Act, the Homeland Security, declassify information and all those types of tactics are out there. There's information on YouTube about narcissistic abuse, psychological torture, things like that. They use the same type of format. So I just wanted to just say that that is a form of abuse. And to me, I think it's worse when somebody is playing mind games, which is psychological abuse, because it can cause trauma and more damage than sometimes if somebody actually was to put their hands on you. And, you know, that was what I wanted to, my input in regards to that situation. And as far as me, I had a situation yesterday I was talking about last week about that whole, you know, group text method that they have of communicating on my job. And yesterday, you know, I had off yesterday, and when I looked at the group text, my supervisor, which I guess she's the director, or she tried to make an implication, accusation that I didn't do my job, and I responded to her, you know, as opposed to reacting. I responded that I did do what I was supposed to do, and I gave the reasoning that maybe this, you know, what she said that wasn't done may have appeared as if it wasn't done because other people came in behind me. So it's just the way, you know, that, you know, they, you know, because I could have gotten into what I ordinarily would have done is gotten panicky. Because, you know, just that panic, being afraid, and that's just due to a lot of, like, growing up in trauma, constant trauma. Like, you react to things in, like, your anxiety, trauma, panic. But I didn't, you know, because I was able to, because I'm still learning and I'm doing research, and so I'm able to start to see certain behaviors and tactics that are being used, and then I was able to better respond to that situation. So, you know, it's still going on. You know, people are not going to change, but I'm trying to the best of my ability to be able to understand this whole system of white supremacy, racism, so I'll be able to respond as opposed to just being a puppet, you know, on a string that somebody can just, you know, just manipulate and control at will. So that's all I have to share. And one more thing, I'm in the dark. We have a storm here where I'm at, and I am in total darkness in my room right now. So I just wanted to add that. And thanks for allowing me to share.
Wow. Well, I hope you're able to stay safe, and you keep your phone connection for the duration of the broadcast, if we're constructive, with the with the gaslighting you were talking about with the wardrobe. Would you how would you handle? I know you said that you wouldn't, you know, talk to them because they'll say that you're crazy, you're making this up or whatever. But would you change your wardrobe? Would you just note that it is happening and leave it at that? Or how would you respond with that?
I would definitely, what I would do and what is suggested is that you want to, you don't want to seem too predictable, so I would change it up. I would change it up to a point where it's not, because they have gotten, they've watched her and they are surveilling her, so they're watching what she does, and so they know her pattern. So what she needs to do, like, it was given a suggestion to me, like, when I was being, you know, stalked recently, like, I was walking a certain way home, it suggested that you switch things up, you know, like, don't try not to be so predictable, you know what I mean? Once they think they have gotten a handle on how she's going to, what she's going to do, she needs to switch it up, just switch it up. Don't become so predictable to a point that they think they know her and know every, you know, all of her mannerisms and all her ways. So I would just kind of like switch it up. I would, you know. just, I mean, you know, and then I would go back if I saw that they were doing, you know, a certain, you know, trying to, you know, mimic that. I would do that to cause confusion for them. But if she feels comfortable with who she is and what she's doing, then continue to do exactly what she's doing. But just don't react, because that's what they want her to do. They want her to react in a way that's going to reflect on her in a negative manner.
Mm. Much obliged. Appreciate the suggestions, Raptomania. I especially appreciate hearing with your own anecdote. You talking about the supervisor came in and accused, oh, you didn't do that. You messed that up. And I feel like a lot of times with those false accusations, they want us to just react and get upset. What are you talking about? And that sort of to get stressed out, to pan, exactly as you said. We, that word specifically was mentioned in Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear. Just, I think he said it was a kaleidoscope of all of these fears. When you just, it's not one thing, it's all of these things. You just kind of lose control. That's what they want. I think I've called that chimping out sometimes, to not do that, to stay calm, and really to not even be surprised in a workplace setting, because that's one of the constant things. Standard operating procedure seems to be to accuse Black people of doing something that they didn't do, or to accuse them of not doing a task that they've clearly done. That happens all the time. So to just already be expecting that, I'm not going to respond emotionally. We can just go through the inquiry to see if this is valid. And then if it's not, all right, we'll resolve it and move forward. Might be a time for a retraction. We'll have to see.
No, Gus, I just wanted to remind you that, yeah, you know, I work with all non-white people, so, you know, but it's the same difference, you know. We mimic the oppressor. I mean, that's the way we were trained. It's to be expected. So, I mean, a lot of us, you know, we take on those behaviors, I mean, because that's the way we were conditioned, so. You know, but yeah, I just wanted to add that also.
Much obliged for the reminder. I forget consistently you do work with mostly, or it might even be exclusively, non-white people.
Exclusively.
It would be the same procedure, particularly there, because, yeah, I'm not going to be coming in at another confused victim, because that can get really bad, to just have a bunch of victims arguing back and forth and, you know, if other people join in or whatever to. We calmly go through the same procedure with these accusations, and especially if it seems like this might happen on a regular basis, same thing, no emotion. We go through the process. Truth will come out. Much obliged, Draptomania. Let's see. If other folks have, so we had the wardrobe situation, white woman wearing the same clothes as a non-white employee, how we would deal with that one. We have the white woman who's causing conflict, getting the non-white employees to dislike another non-white employee. And we have the breastfeeding situation. Those are three that folks have specifically requested constructive feedback. If folks have thoughts, suggestions for those specific incidents, let us know. And or if you have your own situation, you can share about that as well. 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Before we get our next caller, see if we can get through folks who wrote in. Let's see. Kizzy's cousin, already mentioned this week. She writes in, I have to make a correction to last week's report on the tackiness of the race soldier female who tried to push in front of me when I was buying coffee at work. I mentioned the male worker at the cafe who seems to spend most of his time flirting with female customers. To clarify, I do not welcome his attentions. In fact, it got so bad I started to avoid going anywhere near the cafe. Man, that's rough. I try to be courteous to non-white people. This male is a non-white, non-black, and I believe would be classified as of Middle East descent. I am not flattered in any way, as I don't believe the majority of them think too highly of non-white black females, regardless of the flirting. Hashtag tacky. I've adjusted my code as I realize that when I deem, or excuse me, I've adjusted my code as I realize that what I deem as polite conversation, such as hello, how are you today, etc., for some people is the window to verify trifling behavior, irrespective of whether they are white or non-white, male or female. I now keep my greetings to good morning or good night. If I go beyond this, for example, how are you? I don't slow down. I keep walking to my destination as I speak those words, in effect, not waiting for the response. That way, the conversation is kept to a minimum and superficial. Keeping those feet moving, I think, is critical to stopping some of that tackiness on these exchanges, like when you're in the hallway or just in transit in the office, poking around, going from here to there, dropping something off or whatever, that the dallying with those where they want to stop, and that's when they can ask you some questions and rub on you and all that other nonsense. Keeping those feet. Oh, morning, Helen. Mm-hmm, doing all right. All right. Good to see you. Keep it moving. Not here to dally. I'm not going to post up on the wall here so we can chat for 5 minutes. I greeted you. I was a team player. I acknowledged you, wished you well, but I'm keeping it on the move. Summary of racist antics for the week. Number one. A race soldier male in the team I am in asked me a question about a letter that had come in from a company I used to work with. It was a request to meet with the CEO, and he apparently wanted my opinion. The letter came from a non-white black male who had spent a lot of effort trying to undermine me due to much racist interference from my former racist manager. I feel like we heard this one before. The racist male knows the history and was being trifling, as he didn't really need my input. I observed that the letter had been sent to a number of teams, including one that I would have suggested he get advice from, which I said to him. He stated none of them wanted to make a decision, which I believe was the reason he was also asking for my input. In other words, racist avoidance and sabotage. I commented that it was a standard request and that I was unclear why no decision had been made. He then tried to get me to indulge in anti-blackness by criticizing the non-white male's poor grammar. As much as I have good reason to dislike the non-white male who essentially tried to get me sacked, it was a step too far. I brought the conversation to a close by suggesting he go back to the other team to get their advice. So critical. This is why I said it takes discipline. Many aspects of counter-racist code are simply going to be about, do you have the discipline to do this? It can be very easy in a lot of situations. There are going to be a number, probably millions, billions, of non-white people that you don't like. It's not pleasing for you to be around them. Might have even had, you know, a disagreement with. Even still, I am not in a workplace, so, or even beyond a workplace, but especially in a workplace setting, I'm not going to sit here with a white person and sit around and, oh yeah, that Edward Williams, he sure is nothing. Can't say, look at that. He messed that stack up over there. Man, try that. Look at that. Can't even spell correctly. That forgot to put the apostrophe right there. That's the wrong form of there. His grammar never has been good. I am not going to sit around and talk trash about another black person, even if I can't stand that non-white person. That's why I said before, white people, they excel at being able to cause conflict between other non-white people in the workplace. Even if I don't like this non-white person, even though I can't stand this non-white person, I'm not going to sit up here with this suspected race soldier and talk bad about this person. I'm not going to help you mistreat this person. Really, if I'm really A-plus counter-racist, you're not even going to know that I have a problem with this non-white person. I'm going to be as courteous as I possibly can. If I see you being especially trifling, I might even force myself to say something constructive and complimentary about this victim of racism in your presence, just to make sure, you know, absolutely not. It's too much black self-respect here to sit around and buddy up with you as we talk bad about another victim of racism. Get out of here. And because this works so well consistently for racists, we've been so brain trashed, they will get us like this. We'll sit on jobs and ridicule other black people. This will become entertainment for them. Pam, the legend, she used to talk about this too. This would happen on her job, where the black people would sit up and fuss with each other and talk bad about each other in front of other whites, and this would become entertainment for them. Discipline. Next, and I'm sure it seemed like in this situation, Kizzy's cousin, where the white guy knew that there probably was some conflict previously before, so I'm going to see if I can come and get her to say something bad. Don't you want to call him a nigger? Don't you want to call him a coon? Come on. Isn't he a coon? He can't even write well. Number two, it was lunchtime, and I had ordered a takeaway from a restaurant near where I work, and I was leaving the office to collect it. That morning, the same race soldier, Mayo, had sent an email to the team reminding people to contribute to the collection for a racist colleague who was on sick leave. Dun, dun, dun. I had no intention of contributing. Music to my ears. As I was getting up from the chair I've been allocated, he started to speak to me. I believe he was going to ask me for money towards the gift. I had headphones on, so I was able to practice planned ignoring. I met him in the lift when I returned with the takeaway. He had also been out shopping for the gift and card. I had forgotten that the bag I was carrying had the name of the restaurant on the side. He tackily commented on where I had brought my lunch from as we traveled in the lift. Again, I practiced planned ignoring. We met at the microwave later that afternoon as I was reheating some of the food. Again, he commented on the fact that I'd been to the restaurant. More planned ignoring. This time, he got the hint. Essentially, not only was he counting my money, he was deeming to tell me what I should do with it, i.e. contribute to the gift for the race soldier on sick leave who used to terrorize me. I've also lost count of how many gifts, visits, and other activities they have arranged for this person. I've signed two cards, which I have not put any money towards, using ink from a company pen. I love it. That's more than enough, in my opinion. Bravo. We have talked about the collection agencies that spring up at work for all kinds of projects. Sick employee, an employee moved on to get a new job. An employee had some sort of tragedy in the family. The cat died, and we want to, you know, get them a gym membership so they can work off their sorrow. Discipline. Said that word before. Discipline, because they will do exactly this. They will come and hang on to that. Well, it looks like you got a pair of new shoes, so I don't know. I think you got your paycheck on time. I know you got $10 to spare. I mean, come on now. Susan is a wonderful old girl. Come on. You got $10. Come on. They'll pressure you. They'll come back two and three times. Come, they're trifling this to come back. Oh, you went out to lunch? Uh-huh. Looks like you spent about $20 there. I know they're kind of expensive. Well, if you got $20 to spend for lunch, come on and give us five. Give us $10. Come on. What do you say? Discipline. I'm not participating in any of this. And that's another one. I would get a reputation that I do not participate in any of these potlucks, gift cards, any project we're looking to crowdsource to get, you know, Helen a new dress, or, you know, get a Starbucks card for Jimmy. It's his last summer. I'm good. I'm good on all of that. Thank you. And no problem. They might even say, well, when you leave, remember this, because we're not going to do any part of you. All right. No problem. I've been warned. Thank you. Thank you for telling me in advance. I won't have my hopes up on the last day. Woo, man. Much obliged, Kizzy's cousin, untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have suggestions, and again, the surveillance, people have written in with the different things with, she said the white woman was copying her wardrobe. On this one, we got the white guy who's coming and eyeballing down everything that you ordered off the menu and using that to gauge how much money you spend on average for your food bill per day. We are under surveillance. It is difficult to grasp the amount of time and energy that whites put into studying their niggers. be aware of that in the world, probably in more ways than we can even imagine, the amount of focus that is on us. Be mindful of that at all times in your thoughts, speech, actions, even how you manage your feelings in the workplace. Be mindful. Neutralizing workplace racism. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If folks have suggestions for any of the problems that have been shared thus far, we have the breastfeeding issue in the workplace. We have the white woman copying the clothes and instigating conflict with other non-white people. That one came up repeatedly. Those are the main ones where folks are requesting input suggestions. Folks have thoughts for any of those subjects, and or if you have your own situation, problems and or successes in the workplace, let us know.
Hi, Gus.
Yes, ma'am. Be in Toronto.
Yes. I first want to say that it's also great to hear from Draftomania, wishing you safety. It's absolutely amazing with the resources that are provided, especially with that connection with narcissism. A lot of the white terrorists do have narcissistic tendencies, and it's very true with the mirroring and the gaslighting, and also with the dog whistling, with doing things only the target would be aware that it's happening, and it's really a crazy making at its worst. The other thing I wanted to mention is that in terms of dealing with the white person who is turning non-white colleagues against the writer, along with other white women copying her dressing style, these are things, it's important for her to recognize what's in her control and what's not in her control. And once she also recognizes this, then it helps to place even more logic on what she will strategically do best. The white woman sending out poison of malicious words and lies to other non-white people. Unfortunately, the writer is not going to be able to control how they think or react to her. Same with the copying of the clothes. They're forms of aggression of what these white females are doing. The most that she can do, as Draftomania has mentioned, is change it up. I'd also suggest to start really, really focusing on self-care and surrounding herself around positive people to keep her reality in check. Because in such a toxic, crazy-making environment, it can definitely leave one to start believing into the distorted, toxic reality. Or perceptions, rather. So it's very important at this point that she surrounds herself by positive people, do lots of self-care to keep her reality in check, and for her to remember that she's a good person, and that is a toxic situation. The situation is not her. It is the white females that are the problem based on what she has written. Thank you so much. I leave the line.
Much obliged. Be in Toronto. I think that's so important in terms of self-care, when you recognize the toxicity of your environment, to make sure that you're doing things that replenish, because I think a lot of us, we just go from one toxic environment where we get terrorized and abused to another toxic environment where we get terrorized and abused. I know Draftomania was talking to us about the situation in her residence where she was being terrorized as well. So if you can do things that replenish, particularly in an environment where you're being undermined, like you said, in that sort of sadistic manner, where it's something that maybe only you would recognize as happening, and so they end up, oh, you're just paranoid and that sort of thing, to really make sure that, yes, when I get out of here, I'm going to do something really healthy, really nourishing for my competence, my confidence, my Black self-respect, and my sanity in general. Things that are affirming for you where you don't have to worry about any of that nonsense. And even hopefully this is not the only outlet. Some people where, you know, you can bring up some of these issues with people who grasp and can help you process, even if it's just listening empathetically. Other folks, much obliged to be in Toronto. Other folks, dialed in if you have comments, suggestions, either on what has been shared thus far, your own situation. Feel free. Line should be open. *61 if you have thoughts to share. Folks are still spectating. Again, investracism-notes.blogspot.com if things are going spectacular in your workplace. I think I wrote it with the description. I'll read some more of our emails as we wait while folks are spectating and hopefully getting their thoughts or suggestions together. I did ask, given all of the hoopla, the more recent shootings that took place, have folks done any asking about policy and procedure in your workplace around violence and how potentially violent situations, people specifically, are to be handled? That might be one for a refresher for sure, especially if, you know, they didn't have anything that dealt with that in any detail to your satisfaction when you started the job. Might be a good one. They just had that incident at the post office this week. That white guy came in there and got all rowdy down in Dallas. It might be a good one just to ask if people come in and are verbally terroristic, look like they could be physically threatening, make sure that that's up to date and everyone is in the know about what we should do, what we should say, what the protocol is for those type scenarios. Might be, you know, a good one just to make sure we're all up to speed. Let's see. I'll get in one more email. non-white male, victim of white supremacy. Observation from my time on the education plantation. So far, things continue to be going well and still prepping for the school year. My tragic arrangement supervisor, Cowbell, and the other Black tech are doing great at training me on how to do my job. Now, that is a first in all the years of doing workplace racism. I might just need one finger. I was going to say on one hand. I think one finger will do it. The times that I can recall someone saying that, wow, I have received great training on my job. They are preparing me for success like that. Woo, that is a singular occurrence. Continuing, I have noted the tacky nicknames like the Three Amigos, the racist suspect teachers may call us in passing when we're walking in the hall as a group. We had a white woman on the program who talked about specifically when white people use Spanish, specifically when they invoke Spanish in workplace settings in this sort of like casual slang, jokey manner, that frequently that is an act of racism. And she explained that in detail in her book. Continuing, she was a guest on the program in 2012. Jane H. Hill, if my memory is really nice. Another thing I've noted with my time on the job so far is that most of the Black staff and teachers are confused. I also had to attend a potluck lunch, and thought of the times that was discussed on the cows. Gosh darn right, my code for this was to get fast food and packaged food items. I avoided all homemade dishes. Me and my coworkers ate quick and got out of there. I'm just pausing right here. I hope what people have heard me say consistently is for those potlucks, I wouldn't eat at all. At all. The only exception might be, oh, they brought fruit in. Now, if I felt like, okay, this has not been molested, and I can go and get a piece of fruit, feeling reasonably that it hasn't been fondled and they did all that with it. But generally, it would be, I'm good. That would be one I would have, caller in Florida at the courthouse, I would have a reputation. When he talks about the custodial worker that they're trying to sign a petition to make him eat, that would be me. And the reputation that I have, I'm not eating any of it. If I'm required to bring items in, I would do what he did, get the easiest thing. And in fact, I would even try and make that easy. I wouldn't even want to bring food in because you need napkins, right? You need cups, you need paper plates and all that. You need utensils. If I am required to bring something, that's what I'm going to bring, but I still wouldn't eat. So we got our food and got out of there. I wasn't surprised at having to introduce myself as the new staff member at the campus meeting assembly, but was surprised. What surprised me was the tacky festivities I had to participate in before. Attendance and participation was mandatory. The school staff broke off into various teams and did events, and the winning team received a prize. My team consisted of two black female teachers and two racist suspect male teachers. We had to go against another team full of racist suspects for one event. I had to run a race against a 60-year-old racist suspect to show my school spirit. I won. He lost. Not sure if winning counts as black self-respect or racial showcasing. Wow. Now, that is an interesting one. I'm not sure how I would feel either about being out in that sort of situation. And I'm racing against a 60-year-old white man for the entertainment of the mostly white spectating coworkers. Run. Always keep us running. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that either. Those sort of events that are mandatory, I would already have my code or be thinking in advance about what I'm going to be doing. As I said, how I would deal with the food situation and all the rest of it. And just let's get through this with as little abuse as possible for all of those days. I always hate those days where this is a major deviation from what we normally do. Like, we are not paid to come out here and have potato sack races and all the rest of it. We are paid to work on the computers. We're paid to make sure the classroom is running smoothly. And then we come out and engage in all this tackiness. This is what they call team building activity, so they say. If folks have participated in these and you have any tips when they have the mandatory excursions like this and you have to, you know, get out and frolic for a day, if you have any tips on the best way to try to get through this, share that as well. Others who dialed in with a hand up, if you have comments, suggestions to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Emmy.
Greetings, beautiful people. I have a bunch of notes. I'll do my best to get through them linearly and make sense. I didn't get to finish typing, but I don't want to be one of those spectators on the call anymore. Unfortunately, I wish I could comment on, it seems like a lot of things are going on, but I can't really comment on it because I didn't catch it. So I do apologize, like, if I don't speak to like a direct question that a person has posed. I did catch a little bit about white women copying the non-white woman's dress. That happened to me as well this week. I don't know how you interpreted it. For me, I found it as an experiment. I conducted it as an experiment. And when I noticed that she was mirroring me, I wanted to see how far I could take it and like what all I could observe, because literally, I mean, the mirror neurons are pretty fascinating. And it means that someone's paying attention to you, or like they're attracted to you for some reason, not necessarily sexual or anything, but like they've got your eye on you. And so that they kind of hold you, like they don't dislike you. That's not to say they're not practicing racism, but it's like, if you kind of are attracted or like someone, if they move to the left, you kind of subconsciously move to the left too. So I noticed this white girl doing it, And so I was just like, I'd even like touch my pen and she would touch her pen. And then I wore a skirt and then she wore a skirt. Or I ate a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and she ate a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And I thought it was pretty interesting. But I don't know the context of your situation. So I have a new job. I am working at a psychiatric facility for youth. These children have endured things no one ever should. So these are rape victims. These are people whose parents are drug addicts, and everything. So they're dealing with a lot of stuff. And this facility is designed to help them. And I'm doing the overnight for several reasons, but primarily because I think that's like the most constructive place for me to be for where I am in my life. That's like the position that would provide me the most self-care. I'm not in a capacity to like give to children and staff and be watched like that in this facility. I'm just not there. So in an overnight, I have like maybe 3 or 4 hours where I'm really dealing directly with the children. And then the rest of it is me taking care of like the home and getting everything ready for them to have successful days and waking them up to have successful days. So I had orientation this week and it was really cool. Like, I mean, I love anything where I can learn. So I go into it soaking up as much information as I can, because once you start working, you know, these resources are available to you, but they become very difficult to access, in my opinion. So here's like just a couple of things. On the first day, again, I told you the population that I'll be providing services for. And so the white trainer, oh, it's me, non-white black female, 2 white females, 1 like fresh out of college, maybe a year or two or whatever, and then 1 that's 34 that looks much older. She's a nurse. Myself and the other one are direct care. And then the white male trainer. Anyway, so first day on orientation, you know, it's getting us kind of like serious about what the work that we're going to be doing and the children that we're going to be providing services for. And he's like, you know, you may get called nigger. And everyone's like looking at me, you know, and I'm all ready for it. Like, I don't even bat an eye. Or you might get called bitch. I'm expecting it. Like, so it's, for me, it's so comical because it's like, well, how's she going to react? And he's looking at me and they're waiting so long for me to have a reaction. I have none for them because I already knew it. Like, that is the most empowering thing. Anywho, there's so many things that were said throughout the entire training. Like, there was no way for me to keep track of it all. But even from the HR person saying, like, giving the hierarchy of the company, saying that there's 2 chiefs at the top and then some Indians above them, just tacky and terroristic. The white trainer, like, over, like, to a, just constantly talking about his family. That training was 5 days. We could have cut it down to 3, or had it be 5 in the last 2 days, actually been far more constructive. White people love to do it, and I consider it an extreme act of terrorism because it's my time that I can never get back, talking to me about things that have nothing to do with my job or your personal life. I have not developed a code, especially for like orientation, and I'm the only non-white person, on how I would cut a white person off. But in my, in other jobs or other environments, I do know how to do that. But I didn't know how to tell the trainer, I don't really, you know, have the time to listen to you, or, you know, thank you for sharing, but that's enough, or anything like that. But to the point that, like, white people call these type of white people who have tawny skin, the sun hits them and they get a tan. And so like his daughter is turning brown because she's in the sun. The kids are making fun of her. So she comes home and he's like, dad, is dark skinned dad, and all this silence. And like, everyone wants this emotional reaction from me. And I'm so in scientist mode, because as soon as I walked in the room, I was like, let's get it. Let's get it. So I was so excited because I'm experimenting all the time. And I think this time I might have pushed the envelope a little too far, but I'll get there. So let's see. Like, the children, they run. The facility is not locked. So that's one of the things we always have to be on the watch for. They can elope. So when they do, we have to chase them. I'm pretty fit, and that's kind of like obvious. And so to the 2 white girls made the comment that, yeah, you'll have to do the running for us. And I looked at them dead in their eyes. I said, no, I won't.
you two better learn how to run. I had a difficulty, like they gave us this packet, the policy and procedures, and it was really like tacky, underhanded. I don't know if it was just cheap, but I don't understand if you can email a PDF what is going on. So they gave us this stack of documents that we had to initial at the bottom of each sheet saying that we understood the policy and procedure. And this organization is legit. Like, it's like policy number 111.2B.36C, appendix 39F. Like, it's like for real, for real. And so I'm amazed because I'm like, okay, so do we get a copy of this? And we have access to the computers, like on the entire campus or whatever, and we could access any information that we need. But then I was like, well, how do I get it off site? You know, like, what if I want to review this? So I wasn't going to make a big deal. And then they give us this little pamphlet, and that is actually on their employee handbook. But that is not the handbook that we signed. You know what I mean? So if you take that and you think that's where you get your information from, that's not what you signed. So what you're held accountable for is what you signed and then anything they might have sent out later. So at the end of orientation today, I logged in and I had already figured, well, you know what? You're just going to have to like figure out how to email it to yourself or whatever. The employee handbook is broken down into like little bits and pieces within a folder. So there's a folder, you open it. Then there's a list of things, you click one. And on that one, there's like four. So it wasn't compiled. This frustrated me. I said, hey, I just want my handbook that I signed. Like, I'd like to be able to look over it. I read over everything that they gave me. Like, anything I took home that day, I read over, especially if I signed it, so that I could come with questions. And so I was known for the questions. We'll get to that. So I asked for the handbook, and he was like, well, I could just give you the stack of paper that, like, you signed. And I mean, like, that was cool. But I said, no, I want the electronic version. I prefer electronic versions. This is me talking to you, not him, because you can search within it. So any PDF, for the most part now, you can search. That's really helpful for an organization that has a handbook that's like 200 pages. It's going to be very difficult for you to find whatever it is you need when you need it. So I like the electronic version. So I said this, can I get the electronic version? He's like, well, you can scan it in. I was like, so you're trying to tell me you don't have it like compiled in one document? So you print each one of these documents out and then compile it into a document for us to sign at orientation? And he's like, well, I guess I can just email it to you. I was like, that'd be great. So I actually didn't leave until I got my policy and procedures in my email so that I could read it, because I've heard of situations where you're just told not to come back, and if you don't have your policy and procedure, you can't actually go and find out whatever it is that they're claiming that you violated, you know? And so if you did come back to try to get that would be considered trespassing. And now you have an entire other situation on your hand. And unless you have made really close friends with someone, and even if that person doesn't have it, you can't get it. So I said, I'm not leaving until I have the thing that I signed. Moving on. The little, like, white terrorists can call you nigger whenever they want. And other people, you know, non-white youth or whatever, they can do that. That happens there a lot. This was pretty cute. I made the choice. Everyone has their own code. My diet's really strict. But when you're around children and stuff like that, especially when they're acclimating to you, it might not be best that they're like eating, you know, nasty school lunch. And then I pull out like my dinner in a, you know what I mean? So I ate what they ate. And that meant I also ate with the people I had orientation with. And I was very okay with that. That was a choice I made, but that ended today because this was orientation. So anything in the future, I'm not participating in, but you know, that's what it was. The trainer got very, very like hypersexualized, especially with me as the training continued. And I watched it because day one, he found like three or four reasons to touch me on the shoulder. I don't know if you all remember, but I have an issue with white men always wanting to touch me. Not like I personally don't like it, but like they always want to touch me. And this is something that I'm constantly having to develop a code around and enforce and make sure I have the will and the discipline to practice and not like, you know, freeze up or, you know, whatever. But I didn't practice my code well, because the first day happened and then by the time it happened on the second day, I was like, wow, like I could really track this, because he's not really doing this whole thing. Like, and even to the point once he started with this whole tirade and eye contact is intimate. There's only three of us. Like, I don't really feel like looking in his eyes. So I'm like looking at the PowerPoint while he's telling a story. He must have not liked it. And even the way that he tapped my shoulder that way, you could tell it wasn't just like, hey, you know, what's going on with you or anything. It was like, you're not listening, you know? But then, and you know, we have CPR. We have like how to remove somebody if they're like a child, especially if they're like aggressing you. But none of those things that we really have to interact with each other. And he waited until today to ask me to be his volunteer or like come up so he could do the Heimlich maneuver or whatever. I might be saying it, whatever, who cares? And actually was like, yeah, you want the person to bend down like while he's standing over, like behind me. And I said, absolutely not. He was like, he even said, touch your toes. I said, I'm not doing that, you know? And then he was like, well, and then you would take your hand and like hit them on the back. He doesn't hit me or anything, but he does that thing. And then he even tried to get behind me, like position his penis to my behind and like do the Heimlich. Man, when I tell you, it was like a complete V. There was absolutely no way that we were going to touch, but he wanted it, like, you know. Then when we had lunch, we were talking about asparagus, and he grows his own asparagus. And he's like, yeah, my asparagus is thick. And I don't try to, like, use your imagination here. He takes his thumb, like you're doing a thumbs up, takes his other hand, all his fingers, and, like, wraps it around his thumb, and is like, yeah, my asparagus is like this. You work in HR. It was absolutely inappropriate. I don't know if you all could see like what it must have looked like. I don't. Anyway, he made like, he was really snappy, made a comment about, I asked him for a pen and he was like, well, didn't I give you a pen? But he had made a comment about what do most people do at jobs? He was like, steal, like they steal pens. And he looked at me. I was like, I'll leave this pen right here. I'm like, but this pen. So I didn't take the pen. So I didn't have a pen and I brought it back up. I said, yeah, once you made that comment, I left the pen right here before you're looking at me. And, you know, things like that. So I could go on and on. Like, it was 5 days. I'm the only non-white person. Like, to the white girl saying she's Gucci, you know what I mean? Like, things like that. But whatever. Yes. So here's the thing. I have to implement my code better. I will admit that. I have a confession. I think I've experimented enough with like being frozen and having the negative feelings around that. But I really do need to make like my boundaries very, very clear with like everyone, even these kids. Do not touch me. No handshaking, like at most, of course, fist bump because it's with the children especially, you know, but like, hey, team camaraderie, like high five, you did good. But like no hugging, none of this, you know, and I really must get better with the, like, absolutely no touching. No, I'm not going to be a volunteer. No, I'm not, like, I'm good. You know what I mean? This ain't my first time learning CPR or whatever. And I've made, like, I'm choosing because they don't want us, especially non-white women, and especially now that we have ways to wrap our hair and look professional and look beautiful. And I think we can thank in part like Muslim women who do it too. So it's like women walking around with their hair wrapped is almost normalized a little bit. But for us, it's like we can't do it unless we're Muslim, which whatever. In the facility, these people have lice, scabies, all kinds of nonsense. And I have locks. And if they pull my hair, I can't pry their fingers. Like that's illegal if I pry their fingers, especially if they get injured. I'm wrapping my hair. And so, like developing an entire uniform that protects me and makes me comfortable to work in this environment. And like based off of what I've seen and what I've learned about like the environment that I'm going into, that's like a self-care measure. And it in no way, shape or form like diminishes my ability to be professional whatsoever. So I'm not getting lice just because this little girl over here got lice. You know what I'm saying? I'm wrapping up. I think that's, let me see. I think that was pretty much like it. And yeah. Oh, I don't know if I told you, but I thought it was cute about the black woman. So she came, we were eating. She came and she sat by herself. I said, hey, do you want to sit over here? And she looked at me. She was like, this is my self-care time. And that was, it made me smile. So I'll always remember her. She works in the cafeteria. But that's how, that's going to be my code. Like when I step away, it's self-care time, you know, and that's okay. Like, even if I don't come to the holiday party, I'm here 40 hours a week. This is tough work or whatever. I need self-care time. That's just going to be my code because, like, it's a psychiatric facility. So people should understand that. Hopefully something in there I said was helpful or at least humorous in some way. Thanks for listening to me.
He said at least humorous. Woo! Right on, Emmy. Wow, what a... what a haul. Pen stealing no goodniks out in Virginia. Let's see. I was going to ask, I neglected to do so, but I was going to ask if we had any listeners who've had that experience, a white person copying you, your wardrobe or what have you in the workplace. And I didn't even have to ask. And you even carried it further where she was, you know, eating what you were doing and all the rest of it. So, wow. They keep us running. I thought that was black self-respect when you start with this new group. And they say, oh, she's fit. You can do the running for us. Reminded me of an educator who said he had to race that 60, keep this nigger running, Invisible Man, Ralph Ellison. But I thought that was great black self-respect, that I will not be the designated runner for the group. You all will have to learn how to do your own running, fetching, as they say. Policy and procedure. Somebody talks about that quite a bit. And particularly, we're in an environment where there's something a little sketch about policy and procedure. Like, whoa, got to really watch these folks. Like, everybody should be on the up. I mean, we should be proud of the policy and procedure. Like, this is to keep everything safe and running smoothly so we can be successful and so that there's no ambiguity about what is expected from everyone here. When that is not the case, we have even more problems. And it puts me at a disadvantage because you're the one who's writing the policy and procedure, so you can change it and all the rest. So excellent, Jai. And yeah, that is, I don't think we've talked about that before, but having that as a PDF, which is great, then you can go through it and search specifically, even though you still want to read the whole document. And she said that. Man, oh man. We talk about unwanted touching. I use that as a subject, a key word. Every time we do workplace racism, it is mandatory that you already have a code. We've talked about it in terms of unwanted touching. Any form, even she was saying the shoulder thing, the creepiness started right there. And we talked about that with other listeners where they said it can be just something that simple. Coming up and putting a shoulder on you in an aggressive manner or in a molesting manner or any manner that is not welcome, not invited, to cut that at the knees. Give them the Walter Beach the Third again. Cut that at the knee because it will just be. We got the progression. She said she tried. You got the progression. We started. Oh, let me get your attention. Come up. Yeah, she's fit. Mm-hmm. Rub on the shoulder. See those delts? Okay. But yeah, I need to do the Heimlich. Yeah, let me grab those. And when you get the nip all of that at the knees, and particularly for the Heimlich, I feel like that is so much black self-respect to say no, because I feel like for the normal person in that setting, if you're in a training scenario, you're in a new job, you want to make a good impression. You don't want to seem like you're rocking the boat, as they say, or being subversive when you just started out. You want to comply. You're being called up in front of the group, or at least having all the attention on you. It's just the Heimlich. I mean, what are you talking? You don't think he's going to come up here and molest you in front of the whole class now, do you? My goodness. Most people would just, I'll just go along. You know, I hope it won't take too long. And he'll just say, absolutely not. I am not comfortable with this. No. That is black self-respect. And I would say to anyone, when it comes to unwanted touching, no is always, always acceptable to say, and at any time when it comes to unwanted touching. Me Too, Bill Cosby, all of that, Jerry Epstein, they talk about this every day, all around the world. Fine. There should be no unwelcome, uninvited touching in the workplace. No, and be firm about that. I love it. And matter of fact, I'm going to make sure that I'm firm about this and my boundaries across the board. I'm going to say this with the children. We had some of the educators said before that is their policy with the students, with everybody. I don't do any touching, no hugs, no nothing. I think Ivy had said before, I don't even do the fist bump. We're not doing any handshakes, nothing. And I totally get that. If yours is going to be, hey, we can do a fist bump and that's it, but make it clear. These are my boundaries and stick to it. That is spectacular black self-respect. The wasting time, I think, is ubiquitous, not just in the workplace, but in the system of white supremacy, white people doing things to waste our time. And the self-care, I think that is marvelous. If folks have break time, if you can get, 45 minutes to go and puff on tobacco leaves, man, I can have an unmolested 30-minute lunch break for self-care. Like, that can be said. Someone, do you want to? Nope, this is my self-care time. Doing fine. Thank you. See you after lunch. Oh, love it. Add that to the counter racist code. Much obliged, Emmy. Exercise.
Wait, don't praise me too much.
Uh-oh.
Can I did do the Heimlich thing. I just didn't bend over and touch my toes.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. I did go up. Yeah. Don't praise me. I messed up. I did go up there. But when he was like, yeah, you want them to bend all the way over and touch your toes, I said, yeah, that's not happening. So I pretty much was like, almost like all the way straight. I like did a little hump. And then, how you like pat on the back 5 times, doot, 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 doot.
Right.
And then you're supposed to like put your arm around them or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That part, but there was like, no, and then I like had all the space, so you could still like demonstrate what it was, but no. And if I had allowed, he would have wanted like all that touching and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to be clear before, it's like I did something. No, I did fall prey to it because I did want to make a good impression. And I also know that I don't work with these people. This is like the last time, But even still, a boundary is a boundary. And it was really, really, really uncomfortable.
I'm sorry you had to experience that. But I mean, that's human nature. Everybody wants to make a good first impression. That's what they say. That's the cliche. But I mean, that's predators know how to exploit in those situations and just being crystal with our back because they will test us. They will test us all the time. I just expect, even in the training orientation in the middle of class, that's be a great opportunity. I can come and fondle all over. Oh, yeah. Move past the shoulders. No, set your boundaries and be explicit about that. Don't feel bad. They can do a lot of things to try to shame us about saying, hey, this is my body and we are in a workplace. This is not a bordello. Let's get back to doing some filing. Much obliged for sharing, Emmy. I said that consistently. I know it's not always, the coolest thing to talk about, but it's so important because this happens to so many victims of white supremacy all around the world. And just recognizing that these are, patterns. This is racist habits, centuries of racist habits and racist terrorism, really. The number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks, if you have a hand up, especially if we missed you totally, if you have commentary to share, proceed.
Hi, Gus. It's B again. The phone had disconnected, so I had recalled and went back in. So I'll wait until everyone goes through, and then I might share some additional comments if there's time.
Yes, ma'am. Much obliged to be in Toronto. Other folks, if we missed you totally.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir. Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I have a few incident reports I like to share. My first one is I somewhat extracted information from a white female coworker. The first one was, I was getting some water in the break room, and it was a comment made about the white female supervisor. She said it was an exchange between her and another white female coworker about something that they say when the supervisor isn't here. And she said this white woman says to her, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. So she says, maybe we can use this as a code to basically determine when the supervisor isn't here. So I said, how long have y'all had this cold going on? And she says, for about a few weeks now. So I thought about that. She said, this was a cold that they had. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. And my next one is, speaking of like birthdays and these potlucks and everything like that, there was a tacky card that was bought. And I don't know if anyone has experienced this on the job. Somebody bought the supervisor a card, and it says on the inside of it, remember when it took more than 2 days, or no, remember when it just only took 2 days to recover. So that's obviously some kind of a, I guess, some kind of an indirect or humorous message talking about debauchery and drinking and whatnot. And I had these two cats on a roller coaster on the front of the car because she likes cats. And she was out for 2 days, but it was on a family emergency. Because I guess she has like a ill family relative or whatnot. So somebody, I guess, thought this was a good idea to buy this or whatever. So the reason I'm sharing this is that even with white people, they are talking about each other. And it's well known, well, at least by less confused victims, that they will feud with each other. But yet, at the same time, they still know how to coordinate to dominate non-white people. But just in terms of behaving in the correct manner, I just thought that was a very tacky card to buy. So my next one was, we take these passports with this expensive camera, a Canon camera, and this is the second one that a white female has broken, like dropped them. It messed up the functionality of taking pictures. So she's been defensive this week about her breaking the camera. And what I noticed was that when she was speaking with the supervisor, she says, oh, well, blank, you know, she almost dropped it too. She didn't say she dropped it. She said she almost dropped it. And she basically is getting upset about every time someone asks her about, is the camera working? Is the camera working? So one time someone called the black female's extension and was asked to ask the white woman, was the camera working? So this time it wasn't the supervisor, because they like to talk about her behind her back, as they say, like out of her presence. And she hangs up the phone, and then she says out loud, is murder legal? Is murder legal? So I'm not going to lie. I just burst out laughing, basically. Like, are you serious right now? Is murder legal? Like, are you going to say that? So they all just pretty much laughing too. So I'm saying like that, I don't think you should be saying nothing like that. And she's saying this because she's just, I guess, fed up with being asked about the camera because she broke it. My next one is, one of the higher ups, he, when he found out about the camera, he was walking out of the area and he said, man, y'all are really rough with that camera, with cameras. And then I'm like, it ain't really y'all, it's her. You can't incorporate everybody into this. You know, everybody didn't do this. She did. And he somewhat retracted that statement. The next day, he saw me walking down the hallway and he was speaking because they've been trying to be nice to me. And I asked him, how was the camera working? And he just said, it's not. And then he, you know, started laughing out of nowhere. And he says, man, you're the only one that hasn't broken the camera. And I said, yeah, I want to keep it that way. So, you know, I just kept on walking. My next one is, I made a call to a customer. And an interesting thing that she shared with me was that when I guess on her phone, when she looked at the phone on a call ID, she said it came up police department. And she was like, yeah, do you know it? Do you know that it says that it's coming up police department when you call? I was like, I was totally unaware of that. I got a few more. I got two more. This one is, there was a black female that I heard about. She went over to switch her hours with her supervisor, and she was told that she didn't know how to help her or whatever. She couldn't, there's nothing that she could do. You might want to go to human resources. And then she had to walk all the way across the building just to go inform her about changing her hours. And then she was like, yeah, you know, she wouldn't help me do it. Like, why didn't you just ask the supervisor? So just, you know, confusion like that going on. Then she got on the phone and called the other white woman, like, why couldn't you do it? And she was like, oh, well, I didn't know if I could do it or not. But come on, this person has been working there like over 30 years. But obviously it's because this person, this female, is a black female. I think racism was being practiced there. And my last one, this same white female supervisor, I was informed that the incident where the water was thrown on the white woman, it appears that they found out they was doing this chat, and they were a portion of it was through company emails. So I don't know if they had a supervisor meeting or whatnot, but the lead supervisor, the white female in the civil area, went to inform the white women, the other white women that was in the chat talking about the girl, told them to delete their emails because they was thinking about pulling their emails. So racism being practiced on a maximum level. And I actually have one more. The black female was leaving. The black female that I discussed workplace racism with, she says she overheard them, this same white woman and the girls that she, or the other white women that she informed about deleting their emails, she overheard them talking about something. But she tried to get a good listening spot, but I guess they must have heard her coming to open the door, so she had to just hurry up and leave because they were staying after hours. So apparently she discovered an unjust networking circle manifesting right there. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Wow. Context of white supremacy, white women at the courthouse. My goodness, where to begin? Let's see. Mr. Rogers, or not Mr. Rogers, beautiful day in the neighborhood. Codification, folks. Codification. Now, they have worked out their cute little phrase. It seemed like it didn't take a whole lot of time. This will just be our way to conceal information about whether or not the supervisor is here for the day. I mean, wow. Like, that is not, in my view, that's not ignorance. I know that's not specifically about racism, but I mean, if they're having these sort of caucuses and they got their own little secret language about relaying this sort of information, what kind of codes and cues do you think they have about racism, white supremacy in all areas of people activity? With the broken camera is so many angles to this one. Now, y'all, we'll go that one first. So y'all broke the cameras, the accusations. And that one, you can just stay right in the question. Like, how many cameras have I broken here at the court? Yes. You, in fact, you're the only boy here who hasn't broken a camera. Aims to keep it that way, in fact. Thank you kindly. Being careful with company property. Yes. Now, not only do we get the false accusation, but it seemed like there was another act of racism, even within all of that. If I was paying attention correctly, Now, they had been teasing the suspected white woman who broke the camera, and if I heard, she's broken it repeatedly. So they're teasing, oh, is the camera? Is it still work? Did you drop another one? they get their little jokes. Okay, sweet. White people mistreat other white people. We say that all the time. So as a part of this, she's getting upset about it. They messed you in the camera. So, okay, we'll get the black female to call. And so she gets mad. She'll get mad at the black female. We'll get a 2-for-1. We still get to pick on her. And then when she gets mad, she'll blow up at the black female. So, ha-ha. That, in my view, that might be another act of racism right there, deliberately. Now, when this happens, if I heard it correctly, the black female calls, probably unbeknownst to her that this is a racist joke. I mean, even if she did, the fact that she was set up to do this. So she calls and does the camera's like, is murder legal? Now, wait a minute. Now, you've been getting teased about this camera thing for, I don't know, a while now. Murder legal at the court? And this is the second time at the courthouse. He had the one before with a white woman to express her affection for other white women at the courthouse. Notice the trend with the white chicks. She says, if they committed an act of murder, I would help them cover it up. At the courthouse. What in the world? Like, how do we keep having these conversations about killing people and murders? And in particular, as I said, the black female who gets set up to call, then it's, is murder legal? I've said consistently, the system of white supremacy, it demands violence against black people. How quickly she's upset, that's what comes to mind. Kill, kill, nigger called to kill, murder. I don't know if she had that sort of outburst with any of the other whites who teased her about breaking the camera, where murder or killing somehow was part of her response in being frustrated about them picking on her about this camera. Incidentally, I have been on jobs where if there is an expensive piece of equipment, something that cost a lot of money, and you were reckless with it, you were careless, you broke it, or whatever the case, that might be, you know, grounds for, uh-oh, we're going to put that, you know, in your file. Like when it's time for a promotion or you broke that camera. You are not trusting. Like, that would be not, this just gets to be a little off a joke. We go out and buy another camera. You break three of them and we buy five. You know, we get them at a bulk rate. Generally, with a black person, you do that type of damage, your career, you know, might be in jeopardy. Next, let's see. The birthday card, even the tackiness, that's why I said, just, you know, don't even participate, because even then it's got to be a reference to going out and being involved in some tomfoolery, some debauchery, correctly, as you labeled it. That's what it's going to be. Even then, it's not even a sincere, you know, wishing you well and right on. I hope you get that raise. Now, the unjust networking, and this just goes back, you know, all white people ignorant about racism. You can keep it in that context. Now, they had the incident you shared before. The water was thrown in the face. It seems like they were doing some texting and talking bad about people and all of that, gossiping and all the rest of it, probably some more unjust networking. So they investigate to see what happened with the water throwing incident at the courthouse again. Like, man, they do not have the best Floridian citizens at the courthouse. Anyway, so they go do the investigation into all of this. And it's not full and open inquiry. It's, it seems like some of these unjust emails or conversations took place on email. Let me go and advise them to delete their email. Isn't that deleting evidence? I thought we were supposed to be about, again, this is the courthouse. I thought we were supposed to be about open disclosure and to getting to a truthful conclusion about why this happened. We had employee violence. What if, you know, instead of throwing water in her face, she'd had a handgun? We just had Parkland. I thought that's right down the road in Florida. That doesn't seem to be the motivating spirit. The motivating spirit is, ooh, if they committed murder, I would help them cover it up. This is way lower than murder. This is just, you know, water got thrown in that wench's face. Okay. Well, I don't want them to get in trouble for these emails. So, yeah, go, Helen, make sure you all go and delete your email accounts today so we don't have that incriminating. Yeah, we can get rid of all that and then we can just move forward and we'll all pretend to be friendly here at the courthouse some more. Get back to making sure Trump gets those 4 more years. What in the world? Like, that? How is that not a violent? How is that just procedure at the courthouse? We're not about open disclosure. We are about concealment, which I've said consistently. Deception. That is one of the majors, really. That is the primary method that white supremacy racism operates, with whites concealing, lying, being deceptive with information. All of that counts. And they're so conniving about it. Like, we're going to scheme after work. We're going to stay after hours and scheme about how we're going to conceal all of this information. And then, Negro might have overheard us. All right, let's get back to how, I mean, at the courthouse again. Unjust networking abounds down in Florida. I will pause there. Was that your interpretation, or am I being loony here about that possibly being another act of racism to set that black female employee up to call and pester this white woman about the camera? And then she says, you know, is murder legal? To her, murder legal? She says that to this black employee.
See what that situation. I agree with that, because the day, I think it was on Monday. It was Monday, right? And I was using the camera. I'm like, this thing isn't working. So, you know, what's going on with it? It has a wireless functionality to it. So it wasn't taking the pictures right, and it wasn't showing up on the screen. So she just came out and just told the truth. Like, yeah, I think this happened from when I dropped it on last Friday. So I was pretty much let her deal with it. And when she came back from lunch on Monday, she just said, you know what? The supervisor just asked me if the camera was working. And she did not have that same violent, aggressive reaction. Now, Tuesday comes, and she comes back from lunch, and it's the three of us sitting in there. And what it really was that the black female received the call and was asked to ask the white woman. She received the call from the white woman at the front counter. And the white woman who broke the camera was asked by the black female. The white woman at the front counter, but she thought it was the supervisor. It was just a white female employee. So she was like, Blank says, is the camera working? No, she didn't say her name. She just said, they just wanted to know, is the camera working? So she thought it was a supervisor. So then she just comes out and says, is murder legal? But I do agree that I think that had a lot to do with the black female posing that question to her. And she didn't have that same hostile, aggressive response to it in her tone.
I think white people know, you know, when they're talking to a Negro and when they're talking to another white person, even if they're talking to, like, if she had been talking, let's say it's a white custodial worker, some white person who has less power than she at the courthouse. I'm not sure she would have had that type of response. White people know when they're talking to a Negro, and they frequently remind us, maybe not always, but they have a way of reminding, oh yeah, you are a Negro, and don't you forget it, regardless of whatever your title happens to be, or even if we're at the courthouse, we're supposed to be about justice, you're still a Negro. Camera that. How about that? Much obliged.
Hey, Gus,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that. I just wanted to add one quick part. Two last things. Now, speaking of that incident where they were acting up at the restaurant and the water was thrown. Now, I'm hearing the punishment for that was they can't go out to eat with each other for 30 days. Now, this is real right here. This is the truth. I'm like, are you serious? You can't go out to eat for 30 days with each other? That's the painful punishment, but I guess they're all white, so I'm not surprised. And there was another one where a white woman asked me, talking about, oh, did I change shirts? And I paused and I said in front of everyone, I'm not going to respond to that. And she just ran away, like walked away. Okay, all right, don't respond. Like, you know, like, why are you asking me that? I said, I am not going to respond to that. And that's it, pretty much.
Love it. That is Black self-respect. And that's another example. I think Emmy just mentioned that about setting boundaries. That right there, that does not have it. We are at the courthouse. We got what's on the docket today. We got a passport. We got a new camera. We got a group of children coming to tour the building. We got photo for the newsletter. We got a whole lot of things on the docket today. None of them have anything to do with whether or not I changed my shirt today. Like, what does that have to do with any of our business that has to be conducted at the courthouse? Like, just, yeah, I'm not going to respond to that. Love it. Love it. Set your boundaries. Anything, anytime some sort of question like that is asked that has nothing to do with business. What are we here to do? Next, you don't have to answer. Let's go about our business. Black self-respect at its best. Much obliged, caller in Florida. Lessons in white supremacy at the courthouse going down daily. Other folks dialed in. If we missed you totally, anybody that we haven't heard from at all, if you have a hand up, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter, yes, sir.
Yes. Greetings, Gus. Greetings, everyone. I heard somewhere in the program the actions of a job predator. I think it was with Miss Emmy. And just would like to say again, I've said it more than once, predators know what they're doing. They're conscious of what they're doing. They are aware that their victims are not going to be aggressive. They've already picked that person out who is not aggressive into speaking to their aggression. I don't want you to feel that it's something totally terrible if you did act aggressively. That's a learned behavior for most of us, and it can be learned on how to stand up to this predator and state exactly what you do not want to happen. Matter of fact, something like the Heimlich maneuver, it should be a situation to whereas he couldn't even think about asking a female to practice that maneuver just off of the the positions of the victim versus the person who is instituting the practice, the maneuver in the first place. But like I said, those things could be learned and you can apply it because that's the only way it's going to stop from my experiences. I have a report. It's not exactly workplace racism because, you know, I am the retired firefighter, but it is involved with racism on a job, Dade County Fire Department. And I basically posted a comment to something. There's a website that was sent to me. I can't think of the name of it, but it's not important anyway, but it's something related to, there's two non-white black females. They are related. I think they're sisters. I know one a lot more than I know the other one because, when myself and Mr. Clark and several other, non-white black males who are, well-versed into Mr. Fuller's counter-racist codification, when we were all working at one station, they would send her. At one point in time, they had hired a lot of black females, and they would send some of them over to our station. And I think it was on purpose. And one of them was the lady who is one of the authors of this website. And it's been, I've had it for about maybe, maybe 1 or 2 years. And I mean, it's all, they're always posting something. It's a lot of pictures, of activities they're doing. So anyway, let me get to the subject. The subject was, the latest Dade County Fire Department class, training class, people who were training, and they put them out in the field. They called, put them out in the field. And, that was talked about on the website, and they mentioned that, they had this, they was completing this one last test as a, like a run, which is kind of like tradition more so than anything, where they would go out on literally on the streets of the Doral area in South Florida, Miami-Dade County, and they'll be protected by a rescue truck and a fire truck, and they would run around the training facility, which was, it didn't even exist when I was, when I came through back in 1981. But anyway, so they're showing these pictures of the class as they're running. And I'm going to set the picture for your mind. If you ever looked at the military and when they're in boot camp and they, you know, they run in the formation and they're carrying flags, that's literally how it's done in these different training classes, recruit classes, they call them. So I wrote a comment down. I said, because I'm seeing the pictures and all I see is white. And it's about, maybe about 2 or 3 black people, a black female, a black male, and maybe one or two more non-white black people. Everybody else is white, out of something like maybe 45, 50 people. So I wrote as a comment, I said, has Dade County Fire Department have they been living up to their hiring standards? So I put it in a question, you know, and so I waited, you know, I would go back to the computer every now and then and see if someone put an answer to the question or even a comment to it. Didn't see any. So when I got on the computer the next day, it was gone. It was gone from the whole thing. My name, the comment was gone, period, from the website. And so I called Mr. Clark on it to see if he has the website. And he told me about basically, yes, they are the managers. The two non-white black females are the managers of the website. But it's reportedly they are binded by some sort of other initiative that has more power over them. And if they wanted to keep it, they couldn't have something quote unquote as political as that, as somebody asking questions of something important. I put it that way. And I kind of like chuckled about it. I wasn't surprised at all, you know, or angered over the idea of being taken off the website. But that's just an observation of something that I encountered this week. Thank you.
Question asking black people. Woo! One of the most dangerous things on the plantation. Wow. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Sometimes that will be the only weapon that you have. And sometimes that will be more than enough. Just ask one question, especially if you can ask the correct question. Are we?
The answer to the question was no. I found out later on because that's been the standard for years that they do not live up to their hiring standards of non-white people who are black. And I made sure I put down there male and female, not just male.
Love it. Love it. ask questions. We should all be getting even better at asking questions and looking for opportunities where we can ask questions. Much obliged, retired firefighter. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Predators are definitely in the workplace environment in the system of white supremacy, period. Being alert to that, hugely important. B in Toronto, thank you for your patience. If you were going to get your comment in, proceed. Are you still with us, B? She might have tuned us out. I'll check in perhaps one more time to see if she still has a comment to share. Do we have other folks' comments, questions they wanted to make sure they get in last few moments of workplace racism? I'll double check, give another opportunity. We should be here for the compensatory call-in tomorrow. That would be Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll review what has gone down the last 7 days on the plantation as the summer 2019 concludes. The COWS 2019 10-year anniversary counter-racist yoga retreat, Florida, December 28 to January 1. Drop an email if you have questions, need details. Deposit deadline is September 15. If you would like to participate, we will have all meals provided. Chef Nadira will be flying down from Virginia to stay with us, prepare plant-based meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for all of the time that we are there. In Davenport, Florida, we'll be doing yoga every day while we are there. Certified instructor, Gus T. Renegade. So I said I'm looking for more teaching opportunities so that I will be an even better instructor. By December, we'll be doing counter-racist workshops. And hopefully, I've just been talking about taking opportunities for self-care to repair, replenish when you have been in some traumatic situations, you've been a little stressed. A lot of people report being stressed around the holidays. This could be a great opportunity to recharge, replenish, eat some really tasty food, do some great yoga, have some constructive dialogues about white supremacy, racism, counter-racism. And even take a dip in the pool. We'll be in Florida, so shouldn't be any snow. Global climate change shouldn't be that drastic, hopefully, by December 28 to January 1. Drop an email if you have questions, or you can visit the blog and get more details. Again, if you have any tips, if you're listening to the archives and you have tips, suggestions, what would your counter-racist code look like if you're going to be pregnant while in the workplace, even after the pregnancy? Lactation in the workplace. Any suggestions? They're barring you from the lactation room. Quality response, best response. Again, I think talking to the most powerful white person, maybe even writing them a letter, might be important. That's Dr. Cambon's strategy. Might be one, he said, in some situations he would even mail a postcard. I was even thinking if they had a postcard with a picture of a female breastfeeding on it to send to emphasize the importance of this matter. And I mean, is that the best way to operate a facility where, you know, you have a lactation room on the facility and employees are being banned from using it? Mothers are being banned from using the lactation room. Is that the best way to operate a facility? Still get to be in the question lane. But you can drop an email and we can read next week if folks have input on any of those subjects, especially pregnancy in the workplace. With that, no, double check. Any questions, suggestions, thoughts folks want to make sure they share before we get ready to wrap things up? Be in Toronto if you're with us. Speak up now or we'll have to wait and catch you next week. I reckon we'll have to wait for next week if she has, she and or any of the other folks that are listening in, if they have further questions, comments, document, if you are in the workplace, that is hugely important, and protect your boundaries. I've said before, you can practice saying that out loud, and that might even be helpful if you've kind of moved, you're in a new situation, and you kind of recognize or even get an inkling of an idea. Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear, that's where I said I think the intuition makes sense to me. The very first time it happens, like with any situation where the predator puts his hand on your shoulder and you get that thought like, whoa, wait a minute, what's going on here? Bing. You get that thought because you don't get that all the time. You don't have that every day that, whoa, something is, you know, really irregular about this guy. Him grabbing me on my shoulder like that, like, what's up? Like, oh, yeah, take that really seriously. And then you use logic and information to neutralize that as quickly as possible to make sure that that is not repeated, because whites, they don't look to just repeat. They look to escalate their predatory behavior. But practicing, saying it out loud. You can practice in a mirror. I talked before about you can have a ritual before you get to your job, where if you're sitting out in your car, you don't sit out in the car to do your breastfeeding. If you sit out in the car before you're preparing to go to work, you can just process and talk through that. You know, that incident happened, he grabbed me on my shoulder or was sneaking up on me or whatever it is. I'm going to be prepared. I'm going to be expecting some escalation and bam, I already know what I'm going to do. I already know what I'm going to say. That can be, I think a number of folks have said that that was helpful for them. Just different strategies, different tips to make sure that we are really firm. That's something the system of white supremacy will test us for the duration of our time on the planet. All of us, males, females, all of us, they will test us about our boundaries. How much can I get away with this Negro? Moving it to zero. That is justice, moving it to zero. I am not to be mistreated at all, not even a quote-unquote little bit. With that, we will assume everybody is grand, and we will be here Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the compensatory call-in. I hope everyone is having a constructive week. Man, summer is over. It is overcast. The leaves have changed at an extraordinary rate. The leaves normally begin to change color here in the Seattle area about the last week of June, last week of July. This year, it seemed like they were a little late, but wow, it has accelerated rapidly. I've been seeing leaves on the ground, and I mean, at spots, it looks like it's October. It's been significantly cooler. It was pretty cool today. It looks, you know, summer is officially over for those of you all in warmer climates, Florida and such. Enjoy the last bits of summer. It has already concluded here. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I was talking about a domestic violence situation that happened in my neighborhood with some victims of white supremacy. First time, last time, I said, repeated that phrase so many times this past week. As I got more details, what was involved before the domestic dispute? Oh, there was some drinking. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, passenger or driver. Let's do everything that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. In addition to being buckled up, let's make sure that we are not on the cell phone if we are in the driver's seat. Small things that we can't control sometimes can have a big impact on just trying to do the best we can to stay as safe as possible under extraordinarily treacherous conditions. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.